This is Wildlife Unschooling with my mom.
Okay, awesome. So, very welcome, Christopher Hill. You are the pioneer in luxury volunteer traveling. And I am so happy that you're here with me because when my child was quite young, I really wanted to travel and to volunteer work with him, but I couldn't find anyone. I mean, that has been like almost 15 years ago. And I couldn't find anyone that would accept me with a small child. So I was like, okay, I'm the only weirdo out there doing these kind of things. And now that I see your wonderful projects, I mean, you have award-winning brands and so many different ideas all over the world. You can go and travel with your kids and do volunteer work. So I think what you are doing is so impactful. Really awesome. Very welcome.
Thank you so much, Alexander. It's such a privilege to be here.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you ended up doing what you're doing, because I think it's a very special thing to do and not the average Joe job that everyone has.
Sure. Yeah, it's there are a few twists and turns in the stories, but here we go. I studied business and law at university and was all set to become a lawyer and had accepted a job with a law firm and had also got them to agree that I could travel basically like a gap year for about 9 months before starting working for them. And then in the course of that, well, actually that I agreed to work with them just at the start of my final year of university. And then in that final year, I won a scholarship from one of the British investment banks, and that ended up in me, while I was traveling, having some interviews with the bank and ultimately getting a job with them and thinking, well, if I don't take it, I'll probably always regret it. And so, yeah, let's give it a shot at London. As a, you know, someone in their early 20s was a very exciting place to be. And so I thought, yeah, I'd love to spend some time here. And in that stint, I did end up spending 6 years working in London. And in that 6 year, I took a trip to South Africa. And on that trip, in addition to going on safari and exploring the wonders of the Garden Route and the winelands and Cape Town, I also helped to build a house for a family in one of the townships. And this just added two extra dimensions to travel for me. One, in contrast to that 9 months of travel that I'd done previously and some other trips, on this occasion, I actually got to interact with the local people and hear their stories and gain insights into their lives. And as I say, in all that travel I'd done, that really didn't happen. And then secondly, it just felt great to actually make a difference in the lives of the family that we were helping alongside to build. And so I got thinking, well, I've learned some good business skills. Why don't I put into something I'd find a bit more meaningful and fulfilling and make it easy for others to have similar experiences? And at that point, I left my job and I went to Canada for a year and did another year of study. And it was in that year that this idea really took root for me. And I wrote the first business plan and decided, yeah, this is what I want to do next in the next sort of phase of my life. And so I spent the next couple of years really traveling the world and building relationships with different communities. Before launching in 2006. So we're coming up for 20 years ago now. And at that point, I had young professionals as our key target audience, sort of 25 to 35 year olds who were cash rich, time poor, and who wanted to have a great holiday, but at the same time, make a difference. But really, right from the beginning, we were getting bookings from families. And at that point, families weren't on my radar at all. It just didn't occur to me that families would want to be booking with us. And so I'd ask our clients, our family clients that were booking, why they were booking with us. And they'd say things like, our kids come from pretty privileged backgrounds and we really want them to appreciate how fortunate they are. Or they'd say, we're looking for a great family bonding experience. Or we want to inspire our kids to become the next generation of world changers. And this really resonated with me, and even more so now that I do have children of my own. And so in fairly short order, we decided to shift our messaging to focus on families. It's not to exclude anyone else, but certainly our primary audience is the family audience. And it's been a blast, really. It's certainly what gets me out of bed every morning is getting the feedback from our family clients as to the transformations that they're making, but also the transformations that they're seeing in their own families. It's really exciting. And just to flesh out slightly, just really quickly, how the ages work, we tend to say that from about the age of five, children can get involved, especially with our wildlife projects, where they can get involved with like preparing the meals and helping maintain enclosures and creating enrichments to stimulate animals, should they be in enclosures, such as, an example would be a project we have in Costa Rica with monkeys and parrots, whilst they're in the process of being rehabilitated. And then we love to recommend when kids hit their teens, roughly, but it all depends on the family. It can be certainly earlier, to get involved with those building or renovation type projects where there is, from my perspective, is where the magic really happens, because that's where you, like what happened with me in South Africa, you get that interaction and the engagement and hearing the stories, and that's where the big impact happens. So that's the story in a extended nutshell for you, Alexandra.
Nice. You know what I really like about your project is, or projects, that because I really think we have a pandemic of disconnection, we put our kids in kindergarten, after that in school, we go to work, and we barely see each other. And not only within the family, but I really think without having all these things we would need to do normally in our everyday lives, we would be able to connect with our people that surround us way more. So I really see a lot of families, not only within, but also with other families, very disconnected. And through opportunities like you offer, it's not only that the families can reconnect and deepen their bond, but they reconnect to the rest of the world as well. So I really think that's two way of reconnection. That's very beautiful.
That's a great insight.
it is, maybe not. Yes, maybe you can tell me a bit more about where exactly in the world is happening what. I mean, it is immense. Looking at the websites of your project, it's like you can go everywhere doing anything, basically. Maybe what is your favorite three places and your favorite three things, like volunteer things?
Okay. Favorite three. Yeah. Okay. Right. I think I've got them. one I was able to do with my own family quite recently, which was in Bali, Indonesia, where it's installing a disabled accessible bathroom for a paraplegic. And it's unique for us because the benefit really accrues to just one person, mm-hmm. but the impact on that one person is so profound. And that's because in Bali, being a Hindu island, if you are born with a disability, it can be considered as bad karma. Mm-hmm. And so you really, sadly, paraplegics can be like hidden away and lead very isolated, lonely lives. And so to be able to enable the individual to have a measure of dignity and independence in an area so personal as, going to the bathroom, As I say, it's really profound. And so that's one of my favorites in terms of projects and destinations as well. And, you know, for instance, you know, our kids were involved with drawing water from the village well and then carrying that water over to where the cement was being mixed and then getting involved with mixing the cement and then loading it into the wheelbarrows and then carrying the cement over to where the experts were doing the tricky parts and most of the, you know, the real work is done by the local experts. And that can, you know, be combined with sightseeing as a family wants to do. Like, for instance, we did, you know, some whitewater rafting, some mountain biking, a cooking class, some surf lessons, some hiking, visiting waterfalls and the rice paddies. And so, and each trip is tailor-made like that. So that's one. Another one that we've been able to do also, within the last couple of years is in Belize. And that is installing eco-friendly stoves in people's homes. And the beauty of these stoves is threefold, really. One, they replace the open flames that you find in traditional huts. And so particularly with kids running around, you know, there's risks of them getting burnt from the flames. So by having an enclosed stove, you reduce those burns. And they also have a chimney to expel the smoke. And so respiratory problems are dramatically reduced. And then they're much more fuel efficient. So from an environmental perspective, they're a win as well. And the other beautiful thing about these stoves is that they can be completed by a family in just a couple of days as well. Again, with expert help, but still, it's quite satisfying to be able to, you know, go right from start to finish with a project like that. And that combines well with diving and snorkeling in the Belize Barrier Reef. There's kayaking to do, there's zip lining, there's bean to bar chocolate making, Mayan ruins to explore. So it's a great destination for adventurous families. And then thirdly, I would say I'm going to go with Argentina, where our project there is actually creating solar heating panels out of recycled cans and bottles. It's this really innovative technology that a local person has developed. And so just in a short period of time, you can provide these, create these panels for families. So, you know, saving on electricity bills, on money that can be put into, for example, education. So that's another really satisfying project. And, you know, they being such a huge country, there's, you know, so many options, but some of the favorites of things to do are, you know, like exploring Buenos Aires, which can be on foot or by bike, going down to the glaciers, or the, you know, the mountain area in Patagonia, or up to Iguazu Falls, or into the desert area of Salta. So many options, but there's three for you.
Really nice. Thank you so much. Yes, so when we initially connected, you told me about a family that I think they took a gap year or they were world schooling all along, I don't know. And you told me about this great experience you had with them. Maybe we can deep dive into this because I think that's quite interesting. I meet more and more families that choose to travel full time and I hear the best stories and I see the most happy kids I've ever seen.
True. I was actually really privileged to be able to spend some time with this particular family. They're from the United States. But when they came down here to New Zealand, I showed them around Auckland for a day, which was a blast as well. But yeah, so they were, you know, in the very fortunate position of being able to take a year out from work and travel the world. And so we had the opportunity to arrange parts of it, not their whole itinerary, but we arranged New Zealand, Australia, Cambodia, Laos, and Japan for them. And so that, yeah, they did a bunch of different projects with us as well, from building predator-proof boxes for penguins in New Zealand.
How cute.
The penguins, being native to New Zealand, are very vulnerable to introduced pests such as rats and stoats and weasels, and then also things that you don't think of as pests, but such as feral cats or dogs as well. And so these boxes are protecting the penguins from those attacks. So they're going to fall with that while they're in New Zealand. And then they build a house when they're in Cambodia for a family. And in Laos, they participated in a reading project, like a literacy project for local Laotians. And I think that, in Australia, they got involved with doing some wildlife surveys with university researchers, so helping them with their statistics and counting of wallabies and wallaroos as well. Yeah.
What cute is that? That's nice. Yeah. That's quite diverse, I would say. And I really experienced that traveling has immense power to educate kids, because I think experiencing something firsthand is a huge difference than learning about it in school. It's quite a difference if you tell someone about hieroglyphs and the pharaoh and the beauty of old Egypt, but going there is it's just a different story. And I think it's connecting emotions, experiences. It's much deeper learning experience than anything else. And I think especially through this volunteering projects you have, it adds an extra layer to compassion and all these beautiful things that are getting more and more lost in our society nowadays. So you're bringing it back. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the big educational advantages these kids have when they go on these trips with their parents, and what is there to learn and experience for them.
Yeah, well, as you've identified, there is the world classroom of Egypt or Rome or Jordan or wherever the case may be. But then on our projects, you can, as you say, add an extra layer through developing perhaps the soft skills, shall we say, of empathy.
Yes,
empathy,
nice.
And compassion and gratitude and generosity and contentment. One story that springs to mind in that context really was a family that went to Morocco with us, and they were involved with building a library at a rural school about an hour away from Marrakesh. And the children were quite young, so they weren't so much involved in the building. They were more involved just playing with the local kids and getting that interaction. But what I heard when they got back home was, when Christmas time came around, they said, actually, we want our Christmas gifts to go to the children in Morocco that we were playing with. Okay. And so, yeah, that really blew me away when I heard that, because, clearly, great lessons of, one, contentment and generosity and compassion were learnt from our trip. So, that's an example that I love to share.
That's really nice. And I can share maybe something from my travel experiences with my child, because I think the strongest bonding moment, he had with like really poor people that have nothing, like really nothing. And we were in the jungle in Thailand when he was quite young. And I figured out that, I mean, there was language barrier and everything, cultural barriers, but it was the easiest for him to connect with these people, to play with the kids, to really bond with the adults. They took him on trips on their motorbikes through the jungle without any problem. And my kid, he was born in Berlin. I mean, he has like the stranger danger thing in his genes, but over there, it was just something else. And I think that brought for me some kind of hope that, okay, humanity can connect no matter where we are from. And sometimes having like really just nature around you and very harsh environment maybe makes it even easier to really deeply connect with each other. I found that quite nice. But I wanted to ask you something completely different, to be honest, about, because you organize school trips as well. And when I was a kid, I was I was lucky. I was in a private school and we had trips every year to really nice destinations, if it was sailing, skiing, and monasteries with monks and everything. So I'm very, very lucky. Now, when I took a look at all the schools in Berlin that my son could apply to, I was like shocked, like, oh my God, they have to stay at home like the whole year. The only way they can travel is with their parents. That doesn't make sense. So I figured out, okay, I was just very lucky and all the other kids around us, it is just normal that they stay home and do only the minimal basic stuff with the kids in school. So I really think that's a beautiful idea to involve the schools as well. Maybe you can share a little bit of your experience with that, because what kind of schools are doing these awesome trips? I mean, it's not a normal school, obviously, is it?
Well, some schools really surprise me that do it. But you're right. It tends, what I've found, most of our schooling clients are international schools, and also ones that offer the international baccalaureate curriculum, and that's particularly because the international baccalaureate schools have the requirements for the extracurricular components being what they call CAS, or creativity, activity, and service, as these three fundamentals that each student needs to do in addition to their curriculum. And so what we can do is help students achieve their CAS requirements on a trip. So for instance, let's take a trip to India. The creativity component can be done with things like Bollywood dance lessons, or cooking classes, or handcraft stitching lessons, you know, from local artisans. And then the activity parts could be doing a hike in the mountains, or bike riding through villages, or some whitewater rafting. So there's those options, and then the service part is where we really come into our own. And so, for instance, in India, we've got projects like helping at there's a wonderful school that we work with in the slums of Delhi. Actually, it's a number of schools now, but all set up by one Indian woman who was from quite a well-off background. Her father was an ambassador. And when he passed away, she decided to put her inheritance into actually founding these schools in the slums of Delhi, because whilst technically the children had to go to school, that is, the quality of the education was terrible. So she wanted to set something up which would enable that. And so we've been able to work with them for gosh, since we started, so nearly 20 years now, with people going and being either reading partners, or they might have more specialist skills that they can share with high school students or special needs students that they have, and or because they're in the slums, helping with repair and renovation work as well, which is an ongoing thing there. So there's an opportunity to get involved with that. But we also have elephant conservation projects in India, which are really incredibly educational as well, in terms of learning not only about elephant behavior, but also to learn about why elephant riding is not a good thing and it should actually be banned, and actually showing students the torture devices that are implemented on the elephants in order to make them rideable. So there's that aspect to the education as well. And then there's also a bear conservation project for sloth bears in India that we've had students go to as well. So that's just an example of what a International Baccalaureate CAS trip could look like. That obviously it doesn't have to be that curriculum school, but that's, like I say, the majority of our clients for our school trips are from International Baccalaureate and or international schools.
Well, that's really nice. How do you choose your partners? Because I've been reading about that you've been traveling for, I think, 2 years to find good partners for your projects. And I think the hunt is ongoing, because there is a never ending. Yeah, I don't know. It's never ending too. It's crazy out there. How do you choose these partners? How do you find these people who need help?
Great question. There's no one way. I think it's over the years, it's been a case of just keeping an ear out and a good network. And so that combination has meant that putting feelers out, you just hear about things and then think, oh yeah, that sounds really quite innovative, and let's go and check it out firsthand. You know, for example, the project I mentioned in Bali, that all came about because Vodafone, the mobile phone company, I don't know if they still do this, but certainly they used to have the Vodafone Foundation, which was where employees could basically get a scholarship to go and volunteer for like a year somewhere abroad. And one of these recipients did it in Bali. And she was working with the charity that is involved with building these disabled accessible bathrooms, although she was more helping on the accounts and administration side, and primarily they actually do prosthetics is the main work that they do across Bali. But anyway, so she came back to New Zealand, and I didn't know her, but someone knew her and said, oh, you know, you should talk with her. And so I did, and she told me about the work that she did there and the charity she was assisting. And so I made a trip up to Bali and met with them, and my approach has always been, and this, as I say, in every instance, it's never to come with preconceived ideas of what I think should be done. It's always really to start with, firstly, finding out if there is an openness to having people from overseas come. And then secondly, if the answer to the first question is yes, then to find out what, from their perspective, help could look like. And so, you know, in that particular case, they spoke about, yeah, well, we could do with the help is the funding that's required to get these bathrooms built. I mean, they cost about $2,500 each one. And so, and that's, you know, well beyond the means of any family that needs the bathroom. And so this is where really our model comes in, which I describe as a philanthro-volunteering model, in that it's the funds that our clients bring, which enables us to pay for the materials and hire those local experts to do most of the work, particularly in the case of these bathrooms. And then our clients come and spend a few days doing the finishing touches to the project, and that's where, so the benefit they bring is the funding to make it happen, and then the benefit the client gets is the interaction that I've been speaking about. And so there's no real one way, but once I do hear about it, then the model is consistent in terms of going there, experiencing it firsthand, and always from a asking questions perspective, never imposing anything about what I might think should be done.
That's cool.
Hey, dear unschooling friend, I'm very proud to present you my first partner, The Bitcoin Way. This is my go-to team for sovereign lifestyle solutions, and you already know the team from several episodes we did together for this podcast. They will guide you through mastering Bitcoin self-custody, securing your data with top-notch cybersecurity, and exploring Plan B residency for ultimate independence. This is what unschooling lifestyle is all about. So if you want to learn more about these freedom barriers, check out the link in the podcast description. See you.
What was maybe the craziest project you ever worked with?
Let's see if this fits the bill or not. it was actually in the US, where it was a wolf conservation project in the US, where wolves have been since I think the late 60s, I might have that wrong, but I think since about then, a real success story in Wyoming and in Yellowstone National Park. And they've since spread out quite a lot, but apart from in Colorado. And the idea was really to get basically sufficient funding to lobby the government, the local Colorado government, to approve a wolf corridor, which would be essentially enable them to roam across Colorado and have that basically the whole southwest, western part of North America, wolf territory again. So that was it was kind of a one-off thing, but yeah, also pretty certainly unique. I don't know if it's crazy, but unique and a great success story as well.
Yeah, if it's a success story, I think that's crazy. I think it's beautiful crazy, maybe like that. What is your personal favorite maybe story that you want to share over all these years you experienced this volunteer traveling, and from the business perspective, from the family perspective, what is your favorite story to share?
Okay. There's one story where it was not a family. It was an early retired lady who, she was English, and she hadn't traveled much at all. Certainly never to Africa before. But for whatever reason, she decided to travel to Kenya with us. And so she required even more handholding than usual. Just a bit of a nervous traveler. And so sort of leading up to the trip and during the trip, there was a lot of contact with her. And she was helping at a children's center in Kenya, and then went on safari and had a bit of beach time as well. The reason I tell this story is because, you know, as I said, she was very nervous. And then after the trip, she was basically on the next flight back down there because she was so transformed by her time at the children's home and had gained so much confidence. She'd rented her own apartment and bought a car there, and she was driving all around Nairobi all on her own. This was really, we just sort of helped facilitate the relationship with the charity after that. But you know, the rest of it, she just arranged on her own. So it was a great story of, you know, someone transformed and then a lot more confident and then deciding to actually spend in the next few months serving in that way as well.
Nice. That is really beautiful. I like to hear that because I really think and experienced it for myself that traveling can be very transformative if you are open-minded and if you have a nice travel experience. Nice. So what is the go-to thing for most families when it comes to volunteering? What is most popular? I mean, I can imagine feeding wallabies. Of course, this is beautiful. But what is the most popular thing amongst families?
It probably, to an extent, comes back to what I was saying earlier about the age of the children. Mm-hmm. And so if the children are preteens, then it is our wildlife projects, which are definitely what we would recommend, unless they wanted to have older children as well, or maybe not, and just happy for the kids to focus on that interaction and just play. So on that, yeah, certainly one of our most popular destinations, actually probably it is our most popular destination, is Costa Rica. And there we do have this wildlife conservation project where there are injured or rescued monkeys, parrots, sloths, or whatever other animals are in there at the time, and children, as I mentioned, you know, can get involved with the preparing the meals and maintaining the enclosures and creating the enrichments and just learning an enormous amount about the animals. There's not any contact with the animals, but there's great opportunity to learn a lot about them. And then, as I say, if they get older, then it's the building projects that are popular, and I've touched on quite a few of those. What might be a slightly different one? In Kenya, we had one of our main projects is renovating classrooms there in the Maasai, just on the edge of the Maasai Mara. So it combines really well with safari. And then in Tanzania, just south, there's the opportunity to build homes for teachers that are near to the schools so that they don't have to spend so much time traveling in order to get to school, and thus their attendance as of being a teacher is higher as well. So those are a couple of popular examples for those building projects that we love to get our teenage kids involved in.
That's cool. You know what I would have chosen? I mean, I took a look and I was like, okay, if I could book a trip, what would it be? Costa Rica. So I'm a typical family booker, obviously. But because I thought, like, wildlife is just something beautiful for kids, and especially my son now is preteen in this age, and I had the same thought process of, okay, we met so many people, blah, blah, blah. What else could we do? What might inspire him to, I don't know, change the way he sees the world? And it would have been wildlife. And Costa Rica, he chose, because I showed him, I was like, dude, take a look, all these beautiful places, what would you choose? And I chose wildlife, he chose Costa Rica. So yeah.
Right.
We are the two
discerning tastes.
Yes, seriously. Nice, yeah. I mean, we talked a lot about what the kids can learn, but what do you think can the parents learn? Because I learned tons from my child while traveling, because he is way more open-minded. He is way more, I forgot the English word, valiente. He has courage. He's very courageous. And I'm not. I'm like a typical, okay, don't get me involved in anything crazy. Let's not do it. And because of him, I started to be okay with snakes, because he wanted to visit a special snake center in Thailand like 10 days in a row. And at the 10th day, I was like, okay, give me that snake. I want to touch it now. And now I'm a pro in this kind of things. And I really learned way more through my child, how he's interacting with his surrounding while traveling than learning from myself. So maybe you have something to share about what the parents gain and what they learn.
Well, yeah, that's a great perspective. I think you can just get that shift in perspective by observing children and taking on their point of view, and that can be, yeah, it can be just on a regular trip, or it could be observing them being open to playing. You know, you spoke about stranger danger in your son. Is that understandable reticence that we have these days with people we don't know? But our children, even if we try to instill that in them, there can just be an inherent openness, which we can learn from, and I've learned from for sure. And then another thing, certainly I can say as an adult, one key thing that I learned, and I'm still learning really, is around contentment, in these contexts. And you touched on it as well. The people that we interact with materially have very little, but are so much happier than myself and people around me, that it was a real key lesson for me that having the latest whatever XYZ is not going to make me happy. It's more, you know, an inner happiness and actually being content with what we have is a great step towards happiness. And that's a key lesson that I learned from actually getting to engage and interact with people, as I say, who materially don't have that much, but, you know, spiritually and emotionally are very rich.
Yeah, I do have some questions around building such a unique brand. I mean, this is not something that happens overnight, obviously. And I can imagine that you faced quite some challenges when building this. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that, because I imagine, I mean, everyone who's building their own projects, it's like raising a kid.
We had some challenges, things like, when we first launched, we had the mindset. I mentioned that it was young professionals was our audience, but also we were doing small group trips, which meant we had, you know, fixed dates. So the first brochure that we produced, you know, had a list of different travel dates in it, and we got to the point where, the really actually frustrating point, where we'd get some bookings, but not enough to hit the minimum numbers for that group, and then had to cancel or try and scramble and try and rearrange people onto other trips. And that, as I say, was really frustrating to potentially, you know, just not be able to run the trips for people. And so our solution to overcoming that really was to shift to a fully tailor-made approach, where every trip is crafted for the individual unit. And that could be an individual, it could be a family or a couple or a group, a school or whatever the case may be. But yes, certainly that springs to mind as an early challenge. We launched in 2006 and wasn't too much before hitting the global financial crisis as well. Yeah. So, we'd spend the first couple of years trying to get the brand recognition out there. And then, you have a global recession. So that was, challenging times as well. And then obviously more since then, COVID was the big one.
That's crazy. Yeah, that was a break for everyone, I would say. Were you able to observe any kind of changes? The world has so many issues, but I think you see a lot of projects and therefore you see like the broad range of problems the world has to offer. You know what I mean? What is fixable out there? Did it change over the years? Got it more extreme? Or do you think in which direction are we heading?
Gosh, I wouldn't like to say which direction we're heading, but I could say things like certainly environmental issues are increasing. And so things like what I mentioned in Argentina with the creating the solar heating out of recycled bottles and cans. We have something a bit similar in Morocco these days as well. Is new and innovative. And I think also one new area, which is also environmental, is around coral reef restoration work. We were just in French Polynesia, in Tahiti, or specifically Moorea, just a couple of months ago. And we were evaluating it in terms of a potential new volunteer project, because read that's what they were offering at one point was actually visitors could come and help to build these small parts of coral reefs, which then grow and go to, initially they go to like a nursery where they grow before they're then transplanted into more substantial existing coral reefs. However, that project, they now actually employ local people to do it. So they don't require volunteers anymore. So it actually didn't get off the ground as a project, but certainly that area of coral reef restoration is an area that is seeing a lot of interest and attention and innovation as well, which is really exciting to see.
That's cool. I have maybe a question. If you don't want to answer that, that's perfectly fine for me. Because I've been traveling, as I said, with my child, and I've seen a lot of, let's say, like kids and also animals. I somehow suffer more when I see animals suffering than when I see human suffering. I don't know why. That's pretty shitty of me, but it is what it is.
It's natural.
I don't know. So I've seen a lot of kids being born in unfair setups, I would say. And it made me question God. I was raised very religious. And through traveling, I really lost faith in God. Now I have it back because I think I traveled more and more and I didn't give up questioning and then refinding my faith, maybe. But the first maybe 5 or 6 years of traveling, I was like, I think God is an asshole, because why the fuck are some kids so rich in everything and some are born in the most awful environments possible? And I go there, I see it, I can help a little bit, that cheers me up, cheers them up, and then I leave, and then the situation is back to what it has been. I live my life and I can go on with being unhappy because I didn't like the TV commercial and these kids are suffering every day. So I somehow had immense trouble with this question, like, why is that going on out there? And I mean, I'm fortunate, but there are so many more kids that aren't. How do you deal with these kind of things?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think that, the issue of suffering is it is an argument against God. The interesting thing is that it's also an argument that's posed in the Bible itself against God. Yeah. You know, in terms of, you know, Ecclesiastes and even Job, really, as well, you know, questioning God when there's in the presence of suffering. So I don't have all the answers, but what I will say may come across as it's not a full answer, but at best a partial answer, and it's retelling a story that I like of the starfish. You've probably heard it, the story of where one morning after a storm, there's thousands of starfish that have washed up onto the sea, and a little boy decides to one by one put them back into the sea, and someone says, "What are you doing? You know, there's so many here, you can't save them all." He says, "Well, I'm saving that one, and I'm saving that one." And so as I say, it's definitely not a complete answer to your question of suffering, but I think to an extent we can just look to ourselves and say, what can we do? And personally, I think that's what God has put on our hearts to in whatever capacity we're in, be the change. And so in a privileged position, that is more than someone who is, you know, in desperate suffering. Even, this is me going off on a bit of a tangent potentially, but, you know, Jesus spoke about, you know, the people given different talents and giftings, and the person who's given more talents, more is required of them. That does put a heavier on us, on the likes of us, to use those gifts and abilities to benefit others.
Yeah, nice. I came to the same conclusion. If I have the power to do that, this is maybe what I should be doing. Really cool. Yes, thank you so much for answering that, because I don't think it's a normal question to ask, maybe. So I really want to know, what are you planning for the future? Because you are expanding your buffet of things to explore constantly. And I've seen, I think you have three different brands, maybe. Is it right? Three different brands. So what is planned for the future? I mean, new destinations, new volunteering experiences. What do you have in mind? Or something completely different?
Yeah. I'll probably, you know, share about the third brand, which is Impact Destinations, which is a much newer brand for us. And the idea with that one is that it's really a pure philanthropic model, as opposed to a philanthro volunteering model like Hands Up Holidays is. And what I mean by that is, whereas Hands Up Holidays involves actually, you know, physically helping, it might be, you know, wielding a hammer, or it might be with a paintbrush, or, you know, mixing the cement, or whatever the case may be. The idea with Impact Destinations is that it's a traveler's philanthropic donation, which really enables the experts to do what they do best in the destination, and at the same time will unlock a unique experience for the traveler. So, for example, and this kind of comes back to my point around environmental concerns, environmental concerns, in that 80% of our experiences are focused on conservation, on wildlife conservation. So, for example, in Indonesia, guests can fund the rescue of an orangutan family that's facing habitat loss due to palm oil production. And so their trees are being chopped down in order to make way for palm oil trees. And so to fund the rescue and the release of the family into a protected reserve. And then in return for that, the traveler actually gets to go into a exclusive tract of rainforest and track the orangutans in the wild. And so it's something I'm really excited about because it's around, for me, it really speaks about leaving a legacy and being able to say, you know, I saved the life of an orangutan when I was in Indonesia. But also, you know, having an incredible experience at the same time. So as I mentioned, about 80% of the projects are conservation related, but other ones are things like in Australia, we offer the opportunity to fund a scholarship for a promising Aboriginal arts student. And in exchange for that, guests get to spend time with an established Aboriginal artist from whom they can commission their own unique work of art and take that home with them. So these are as far as I know, it's a unique concept and something I'm really excited about and always on the lookout for new ways that we can, as I say, enable the funding to have an impact, enable the locals to do what they need to do, but also create something unique for the traveler.
Really nice. Pretty cool. So for everyone who's now feeling like, I would want to go on these trips, I will put all the links to your work in the podcast description, of course. And maybe you want to share where is the go-to source to stay up to date with the things you do.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alexandra. Probably still our websites, which then can take you to the socials if you're interested. So there's handsupholidays.com and impactdestinations.com and handsupschooltrips.com.
Yeah, pretty nice. Nice, really. Thank you so much for sharing all this information with me. I know that some questions might have been like a bit off, but I really enjoyed all your impact and everything that you shared. I love what you're doing. I really think that is what more and more people should be doing. Really awesome. Thank you so, so much for being my guest.
Absolutely a pleasure, Alexandra. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support my work, please head over to Fountain or Linktree. I do accept Bitcoin, and it means the world to me if you guys support my work. And leave a comment, reach out to me on Noster. I'm really happy to hear from you. Thank you so much. And if you want to have more of Wildlife Unschooling, head over to Fountain. There's a Wildlife Unschooling Premium. It starts with $5 a month, and you can pay more if you want, and you can pay in Bitcoin. There you will find all bonus episodes and you will have early access to all my scheduled episodes. Have fun and see you soon.